Well, that was something. I'm still, even now, at a loss to know why she was so hard on me that night. I do believe it was not so much dislike of me as that she was distraught at falling from power and having to leave Bavaria in disgrace. And yet, it may have been that she'd still not forgiven me for having her hooted off the London stage. At any rate, it seemed that her kindness to me when I first came to Munich had been all a sham to lull me into easy prey for Rudy. Oh, well, let her dislike me as long as she gave me a lift. It was better here than tramping round Munich, starting at every shadow. We stayed that night at a house in the suburbs, and I was graciously permitted to share a garret with her servant, Papon, who snored like a horse and had fleas. At least I got fleas, so they must have been his. In the morning, word came that the station was closed as a result of the recent disorders, and we had to wait a day, while Lola fretted and I sat in my attic and nursed my valise. Next day, the trains were still uncertain, and Lola vowed she wouldn't stay another night in Munich, which pleased me considerably. The sooner we were off, the better. So she decided that we should drive out of town a day's journey and catch a train at some village station or other. I've forgotten the name now. All these arrangements, of course, were made without any reference to me. Lola determined everything with the people of the house. My poor old Flashy lurked humbly in the background, out of sight, and expecting to be asked to clean the master's boots at any minute. However, in the wasted day that we spent waiting, Lola did speak to me, and was even civil. She didn't inquire about what had happened to me in that time, since she'd helped to have me shanghaied out of Munich by Rudy. And when I took advantage of the thaw in her manner to try to tell her, she wouldn't have it. "There's no profit in harking back," says she. "Whatever has happened, we shall let bygones be bygones." I was quite bucked up at this and tried to tell her how grateful I was and how deeply I realized how unworthy I was of her kindness, etc., etc., and she did give me a rather quizzical smile and said we would not talk about it, but we got no warmer than that. However, when it came to set out on the day after, I found she'd gone to the trouble of getting me a clean shirt from the master of the house. And she was quite charming as we got into the coach, and even called me Harry. "Come," thinks I, "this is better and better. At this rate, I'll be mounting her again in no time." So I set myself to be as pleasant as I know, and we talked away, quite the thing. But not about the past few months. It got better still during the morning. She began to laugh again, and even to rally me in her old Irish style. And when Lola did that, turning on you the full glory of those brilliant eyes, well, unless you were blind or made of wood, you were curling round her little finger in no time at all. I must say I was a little puzzled by this change of mood towards me at first, but after all, I said to myself, she was always an unpredictable piece, melting one minute, raging the next, cold and proud, or gay and captivating, a queen and a little girl all in one. I must also say again that she had uncanny powers of charming men, far beyond the simple spell of her beauty, and by afternoon we were back on our old best terms again, and her big eyes were taking on that wanton, languorous look that had used to set me twitching and thinking lewdly of beds and sofas. Altogether, by afternoon it was understood that she'd not part company with me as she'd intended. We would catch the train together, with Papon, of course, and travel on south. She'd still not decided where to go, but she talked gaily of plans for what she might do in Italy or France, or whatever place might take her fancy. Wherever it was, she would rebuild her fortune, and perhaps even find another kingdom to play with. "Who cares a snap for Germany?" says she. "Why, we have the whole world before us, the courts, the cities, the theatres, the fun." She was infectious in her gaiety, and Papon and I grinned like idiots. "I want to live before I die," she said that more than once. Another of her mottos, I suppose. So we talked and joked as the coach rattled along, and she sang little Spanish songs, gay, catchy ditties, and coaxed me to sing too. I gave them Gary Owen, which she liked, being Irish, and The British Grenadiers, at which she and Papon laughed immoderately. I was in good spirits. It was gradually dawning on me at last that I was going to get away, high, wide, and handsome, jewels and all, and I was warm at the thought that all the time the brilliant, lovely Lola never suspected what she was helping me to escape with.